It's Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brings together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. With today's guests and the topic for Encounter, here is Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, U.S.-Africa relations as the first-ever U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit concludes in Washington. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. President Barack Obama's effort to engage Africa brought together the largest summit of African leaders ever held in Washington. But China has hosted such summits before, and the U.S. gathering highlights what some see as a belated U.S. effort to catch up and expand its economic and commercial ties with Africa. In contrast to China, the United States has traditionally focused on development issues, tackling and eradicating HIV/AIDS, and trying to resolve some of the most persistent conflicts. This large gathering of nearly 50 African heads of state, the leaders of Sudan, Eritrea, Central African Republic, and Zimbabwe were excluded, as they are currently not in good standing with either the African Union or the United States, aimed to shift that traditional focus. It allowed top U.S. officials to broker deals between American companies and African dignitaries, as well as press for action on security and human rights concerns. Public and private investments totaling about $37 billion were announced. The bulk of the commitments came from private sector companies like Coca-Cola and IBM. Six of the world's 10 fastest-growing economies are in Africa. However, the summit coincided with the largest and most deadly Ebola outbreak in West Africa, reminding all of us of the precariousness of the continent's public health infrastructure and impediments to investment in some countries. The presidents of Liberia and Sierra Leone, the countries hardest hit by the outbreak, stayed home to deal with the crisis. Well, for more on the significance and follow-up of the first-ever U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, we turn to two distinguished former ambassadors. Ambassador Herman Cohen was Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs during the first George H.W. Bush administration, currently a business consultant with the Cohen & Woods firm here in Washington, and Ambassador David Shin. He's former U.S. Ambassador to Ethiopia and Burkina Faso, currently Professor of International Affairs at George Washington University. He blogs at the official blog of Ambassador David H. Shin. And both ambassadors join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Gentlemen, welcome to you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol.
Well, Ambassador Cohen, let me begin with you for your reaction to the summit. Do you see it, as some do, as a big photo op, a talk shop, or do you really believe that this event can be a catalyst for greater U.S. trade and investment?
I think it was a very constructive event. What President Obama is trying to do, in my opinion, is to change the conversation. Up until now, U.S. relations with Africa has been about foreign aid. What can we do to help Africa? And this has been a very successful 50 years of giving foreign aid, and Africa has advanced. But what President Obama wants to do now is say, look, if you really want to take off economically, you need investors. You need African investors, and you need foreign investors. And we're here to help you find investment partners. And I think at the summit, some of the biggest U.S. presidents of corporations and chief executive officers came, and they mingled with these African heads of state. So I think that was a good thing.
All right, we'll get more into details. But let me turn to you, Ambassador Shin, for your reaction. Are you equally optimistic and positive about the outcome of the summit, or do you see some shortcomings, a one-off? Do you see a potential for a lack of follow-up?
Well, of course, we don't know whether this particular event is one-off or not. There certainly will not be anything quite like it in the remainder of the Obama administration. And with a new president, irrespective of the party that person may come from, it's impossible to know what that individual will do in terms of a follow-on. Having said that, I think the event was successful. I think the initial returns from those who participated in it, at least those that I've heard from or read about, have been largely positive, in fact, overwhelmingly positive.
From both the African and American perspective?
Yes, yes. I'm thinking particularly of the African perspective, which is really, in many respects, the more important perspective in this case. And I agree with Ambassador Cohen's analysis of it. I would add, on the aid side, the U.S. aid to Africa has been running at about $8 billion per year in recent years, and I see no indication that that's going to be reduced. On the other hand, it's not likely to be increased, and that's where the shift comes in. To the extent there are new resources going into Africa, I think increasingly this administration would like to see them coming from the private sector.
Ambassador Cohen, what are you hearing from your African friends at the summit? Are they equally positive?
I think so. I think they enjoyed the meetings with private sector people. You don't have president of General Electric Corporation, of Coca-Cola, going to Africa a lot. So they were very happy to meet with these people. And I think the heads of corporations saw that these African leaders are very civilized people and that they felt that they could go to these countries and feel pretty safe with their investments.
On the other hand, as I mentioned in the introduction, we had the outbreak of Ebola on the continent, for example, and then there are a number of conflicts, whether in Libya, Mali, Central African Republic, the Boko Haram threat in Nigeria, the civil war in South Sudan. To what extent do you think these smoldering conflicts and even the Ebola outbreak potentially detracted from the summit?
Well, I think when President Obama met with the heads of state alone on Wednesday, they spent virtually the entire day together. There was the investment aspect, but there was also the security and government discussions. And I believe from what I hear that President Obama assured them that the U.S. will be with them in the fight against terrorism and subversion and money laundering and drug running, especially in those countries in West Africa and the Sahelian region. So there was a good discussion about U.S. support, mainly in training and in strategy and in intelligence. So it wasn't just business, it was also security.
Indeed. Back to you, Ambassador Shin. Back to the conflicts and threats of terrorism in Libya, Mali, CAR, Boko Haram, and so on, and of course the Ebola outbreak. To what extent did these things perhaps detract or in some ways sow some fear in some of the investors that were present at the summit?
I doubt if it had much impact on those who were present at the summit. The ones I would worry about are those who were not present, who may have been thinking perhaps of investing in Africa, still are very lacking in knowledge about the continent, and are probably overwhelmed by the continuing conflict and now the new Ebola crisis. I think the impact will not be on the General Electrics and the IBMs and the Procter & Gambles of the world. They know the continent too well. They've got too much money invested there. They'll go ahead anyway. I would be concerned about the small American company or even medium-sized American company with little or no experience on the continent, and they may be still put off by these other developments. So that is a concern.
Back to you, Ambassador Cohen. We can't talk about Africa without talking about China and comparisons between China and the United States. China is doing twice as much trade with Africa as the United States, but Beijing has been accused of ignoring governance and human rights issues. Talk about to what extent the United States is stepping up its game, in a sense, to try to either compete with China or begin to at least catch up to some extent.
Well, I've never heard a single American official say that what China's doing in Africa is detrimental to U.S. interests. You know, they're doing infrastructure, they're building roads, bridges, dams. That is fine. That's good for Africa, and they're investing in businesses. So we don't see it as competition, as far as I can tell, or as something that's bad for us. What we are hearing from Africans lately is the bloom is off the rose in the sense that there's very little quality control. I have relations with a U.S. construction company that says they're going into Africa now to repair airfield runways that the Chinese have built and that sort of thing. I had a talk with one African minister the other day and said, look, we want you to do a hydroelectric dam in our country, but please don't have Chinese construction companies do it, even though they're the cheapest. So something is happening. And also the way the Chinese treat their African workers has been not very kind. So we are not catching up to the Chinese. I think what we're doing is telling the Africans that they need more private investment and we're there to help them get the Americans in without a sense of competing with anyone.
Back to you, Ambassador Shin. And of course, President Obama made a point to say that, unlike China, that the United States is less focused on extracting resources from Africa and actually more focused on deepening trade and investment relationships. And that actually complements what Ambassador Cohen said about the so-called bloom is off the rose because some of the Africans are seeing shoddy construction, a lack of attention to labor rights, not using enough African labor on the part of the Chinese. I mean, you've been studying the Chinese involvement in Africa. How do you see the comparison or contrast?
Well, first, one has to be fair in terms of U.S. trade with Africa, and the vast majority of American imports from Africa are from the oil sector. So we, too, are importing primarily natural resources, as are the Chinese. In fact, in that context, the percentages are not significantly different. China imports more in terms of its gross imports, but in terms of percentages, it's about the same as what goes from Africa to the United States. On the labor side, this has been a problem for China, particularly also using Chinese labor on the continent to an excess, according to what some Africans say. And they're going to have to be more careful with that. They have been so successful on the continent because they usually offer the cheapest price on their bids. And sometimes it's a question of you get what you pay for. If an African government wants a fast, cheap product, a fast road, for example, Chinese will be happy to do it for them, even though that road may not last very long. The American companies would be, one, they're not going to be as cheap, and two, I think they would be very reluctant to do a cheap, sort of shoddy project anyway, because it would redound to their detriment in terms of their reputation.
Back to you, Ambassador Cohen, to talk more about the business relationships, the investments that were announced at the summit. To follow on what Ambassador Shin said about the United States is still, in fact, importing lots of oil and gas from Africa. But do you see signs that U.S. businesses are indeed looking to make inroads in consumer products, capital goods? Do you see a shift in terms of both our investments and potentially imports from the continent, from other sectors?
Well, because of the high prices for commodities going to China or going to the United States or Europe, there is a growing middle class in Africa, people who have disposable income, and they are buying things. So look at Walmart. They purchased a South African company with about 15 stores in 7 African countries. So that is a major American presence now. President Obama has started something called Power Africa. What he is saying is, look, you're not going to get anywhere unless you have electricity. How could you have a company that's manufacturing stuff? Or how could you have ports that operate efficiently without power? So he is encouraging U.S. companies to invest in power, and not only encouraging, but he's putting money behind it. For example, I work with a U.S. company that does power plants in Africa, and we put a power plant in Togo, and we got financing from the U.S. government, OPIC, Office of Private Investment Guarantees, 70% at low interest. So U.S. is putting its money where its mouth is to help bring power to Africa.
Ambassador Shin, your thoughts with regard to other sectors in addition to oil and gas. Do you see a true shift in U.S. investments in other sectors, capital goods and in power and so forth, as a result of this summit and the run-up to it?
Yes, there definitely is a move away from the natural resource sector. Part of that is driven by the fact that there is more U.S. domestic oil production because of fracking, which has had a major impact upon our imports from around the world and particularly from West Africa. So those imports are dropping for that reason. But the good news side of this particularly is that I think a growing number of companies are, in fact, putting more money into Africa, and we saw that with this summit. Coca-Cola is putting in $5 billion new dollars. Now, that's over a 6-year period of time. It's not 1 year. IBM is putting in $2 billion. That is over several years also. You have General Electric putting in $2 billion new dollars. That's over a 4-year period of time. But this is new money, and these are impressive figures, and the list goes on and on and on. Those are just some of the bigger investments. In fact, the Coca-Cola money is $5 billion on top of $12 billion that had already been committed between 2010 and 2020. So that gets to be very impressive money when you add it all up. And these are not in the extractive sector.
Before I go to a break, are GE, IBM, Coca-Cola, and so forth, are they investing in specific countries, and what are they?
Well, in the case of Coca-Cola, it's really spread all over the continent because they're providing the investment to their local bottlers, basically. Coca-Cola is also going into an interesting activity where they're trying to purchase more mango, pineapple, and tea for their drinks, some of which will be sold in Africa, some of which will presumably be sold elsewhere. And that's an investment to build up these commodities, these crops in Africa, which should work to the long-term benefit of the African country involved. Countries like Malawi are involved in that, for example, Liberia.
You're listening to Encounter. On the Voice of America, my guests are former Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs under the first Bush administration, Ambassador Herman Cohen. He's currently a business consultant. And Ambassador David Shin, former U.S. Ambassador to Ethiopia and Burkina Faso, currently Professor of International Affairs at George Washington University. We're talking about the significance and outcome of the first ever U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit here in Washington. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Encounter online as a podcast, and you may leave a comment on our new Facebook page at facebook.com/CarolCastielleVOA, or send an email with your feedback to encounter@voanews.com. Here's a shout-out to loyal listener Amadou Fan from Bamako, Mali. Well, back to you, Ambassador Cohen. Now, there are critics of the summit, of the emphasis of the summit, the fact that a lot of leaders here, even though the most egregious ones, the ones who, you know, have run afoul of the African Union and the United States, such as, you know, Zimbabwe and, of course, Sudan, that there wasn't enough emphasis on human rights, civil society concerns. Do they have a point?
To a certain extent, they have a point, but I think President Obama did not ignore these issues in his private meetings with the heads of state, not only because good human rights are good for themselves, but what he's saying to them is, look, you have to have the type of governance which will attract investors. If you have an authoritarian system, if there's no rule of law, if you cannot enforce contracts, if everything is arbitrary, if when you go to court, the judges decide not on the basis of the facts, but what some minister is telling them, you're not going to get people to invest. And not just foreign investors, but local investors will not invest. So he was talking about good governance, which includes good human rights. And I can't imagine that he didn't talk to them about that.
Indeed, and we did hear the C word, you know, corruption, and how that's not good for business. Ambassador Shin, your take on the critics with respect to this summit, those who say, well, just simply not enough emphasis, and even among the leaders that were here, there are some bad apples, and perhaps they don't rise to the level of a Robert Mugabe, but there are certainly no Democrats.
Well, and sometimes it's hard to appease all of the human rights groups unless you install a Mandela in every country on the continent. I take their point. It was certainly not one of the areas that was highlighted, and to that extent, perhaps one can be criticized. But one has to be realistic about these conferences and what you're trying to do and whom you are dealing with. And in all fairness, there was actually one initiative that came out of the conference, which I think does directly deal with the issue of democratization and human rights, and that was the Security Governance Initiative. It is a new effort funded at $65 million in the first year, and the whole idea is to improve the institutional capacity of the security sectors in African states, starting with six of them that have been identified. And that has a very strong overtone of better human rights practices, more effective judiciary, faster pace of democratization. So there was some direct attention to this topic.
Well, speaking of those issues, the rule of law, Ambassador Cohen, as you said, unless there's rule of law, a reining in of corruption, and a better infrastructure, whether it's health or judicial, one can't really invest and feel confident, let alone foreign investors. So from your vast experience, do you think the Africans are creating the right conditions for U.S. investment and trade, especially since the 1990s when the African Growth and Opportunity Act was launched? Do you see some progress, you know, measurable progress?
I see progress, but you have to look at it on a country-by-country
exactly.
basis. You can't generalize. For example, I was talking to the president of Tanzania recently, and I said, congratulations, you moved up on the list of good environment for business from 119 to 88. Congratulations. He says, yeah, it's still not enough. We got to get up higher. So you do have heads of state who are looking at this and are saying, how can we improve the situation for bringing in business, make it easier for them? For example, in Mozambique, it takes about a year to get a license just to start a business. And people don't want to wait that long. So I think things are slowly improving in many places, but in other places, they're not.
Okay. Your take on that, Ambassador Shin, with regard to the investment climate. Are you seeing improvement over the last 10, 20 years in specific countries at least?
Yeah, that's the issue. In specific countries, I am. But unfortunately, there are other countries where there has not been improvement, or in a few cases where there even are setbacks, particularly where you have conflict that has broken out. I mean, South Sudan is a case in point. There was so much optimism about South Sudan in the beginning, and now, of course, there's very little optimism. But there are countries that have long performed well, Ghana, Namibia, Botswana, Mauritius, Senegal. The list is actually quite long, and they have a very strong track record for doing well on both the governance, democratization, and investment climate side.
Any other country to add or subtract to that, Ambassador Cohen? You know, the good news stories, specific countries that are making headway.
Yeah, I think Tanzania is getting a lot better also, and Lesotho. There are several, but I think Ambassador Shin mentioned the main ones.
Well, let me look at actually shortcomings or perhaps impediments on the U.S. side. Ambassador Cohen, you mentioned OPIC earlier, but what about Exim Bank? Right now, Exim Bank, that's the import-export bank, is up for reauthorization. Talk about the role of Exim Bank. And to what extent is Exim Bank critical to this new strategy of increasing U.S. investment in trade? And what are the prospects for the reauthorization?
It's very important that Exim Bank be reauthorized because when American companies want to sell abroad, for example, General Electric sells gas turbines to make electricity, and they're going to compete with governments like Germany who are supporting Siemens and the Chinese who have their companies that manufacture turbines. And if Exim Bank can't give guarantees against political risk, if they can't guarantee loans given by American banks, the United States will be at a great disadvantage, and they will lose these markets, definitely.
However, there are some members of Congress, among whom some of the so-called Tea Party Republicans, who are loath to reauthorize Exim Bank. So, you know, how do you see the prospects?
Well, the people in the Tea Party say this is welfare for companies. We shouldn't be giving them money or assuring their money. They should compete on their own. But we're competing in a worldwide market. And if Germany is doing it, France is doing it, China's doing it, we can't afford not to do it or else we'll lose a lot of these exports.
Ambassador Shin, what are your thoughts? And do you think that, you know, we can overcome some of these perceptions on the part of some conservative Republicans who see this, as Ambassador Cohen said, some kind of welfare, where in fact it's just leveling the playing field so that the United States can compete with its EU counterparts in China and others?
Yes, unless Congress renews the mandate, Exim Bank will disappear as of September 1 of this year. In my view, that would be catastrophic. I can't think of a more ill-conceived policy than letting Exim Bank expire. And I think as soon as some of these members of Congress understand how many jobs are created in their districts as a result of Exim Bank financing, they're going to be a little less outspoken about wanting to shut it down.
Well, that's a very good point. And let me ask that to Ambassador Cohen. We talk about this investment in Africa, and we generally think that, well, the African countries and the people of Africa will be the beneficiaries. But what about the United States? What are the advantages? What benefits will accrue for the United States? Will jobs be created with, you know, increased investment in the continent?
Definitely. The U.S. will be sending its products over there. We'll be sending our managers over there. Even some of our skilled workers will be going over there. And to get back to Exim Bank, when they guarantee our exports, they have to be American products. They will not guarantee products from other countries. That means that Americans are making these things. So it's extremely essential. There is always an advantage to the U.S. economy when American companies invest anywhere in the world. And Africa, I think the rate of return is even higher.
And let me put that question to you in a little different way, Ambassador Shin. How can the administration translate benefits to a rather skeptical U.S. public as well as a skeptical U.S. Congress, at least some members, who are still operating under sort of stereotypes of a continent plagued by conflict, and now the Ebola outbreak. How can we convince these people that there are benefits to the United States, including jobs?
Well, the first thing you do is you try to add up the numbers as best you can for the number of jobs that have been sustained or created in each congressional district, and you get that information back to the congressperson from that area or the critic, whoever it happens to be in that district, and you get it out to the public in that particular district. And I think once they understand the connection between jobs created as a result of Ex-Im Bank financing, they're just going to be a little less willing to get rid of the organization.
And for a final question back to you, Ambassador Cohen, let's not forget the youth in Africa. This is a huge population full of talent. And we know that there was the so-called Young African Leadership Initiative that President Obama initiated called YALI. Talk about the importance of that program, and will it in fact outlive this administration in your view?
I think it's extremely important. By the year 2040, the average age in Nigeria will be 21. So that means there'll be lots of young people looking for jobs, looking for education, and if they're not satisfied, you get more and more people joining extremist groups. So it's not only important for Africa's welfare and security, it's important for America's security that the future young people of Africa take part in economic expansion.
And the last word to you, Ambassador Shin, and define YALI and why it's important for it to continue.
This is an initiative that dates back a couple of years, and it's essentially an effort by the Obama administration to at least initially bring about 500 young African leaders who apply to join YALI in their individual countries to the United States for a period of some weeks where they do internships, get leadership training, and there's an effort to maintain continuous contact with them after they go back to their home countries. The goal is to try to expand this program, as I understand it, to, I think, 1,000. It's been a very popular program on the continent.
However it's funded, let's hope that it will continue. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Ambassador Herman Cohen, former Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, and Ambassador David Shin, former U.S. Ambassador to Ethiopia and Burkina Faso. Gentlemen, thanks so much for coming in, sharing your terrific insights.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Carol.
Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Dan Crafton, and I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.
Encounter on VOA News Now. Encounter on VOA News Now brought together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. Your host was Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another Encounter on VOA News Now.